From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, after a violent incident at the GOP's Metropolitan Club, state Democrats and Republicans are blaming each other. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Larry Sharp, the Libertarian candidate for governor in New York, and state and local officials mark the completion of the first phase of Frontier Town. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. State Democrats and Republicans are accusing each other of condoning violence after a weekend incident that left the GOP's Metropolitan Club in New York City vandalized and protesters from far-right and far-left groups under arrest. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The trouble began when the leader of Proud Boys, Gavin McInnes, was scheduled to speak at New York City's Metropolitan Republican Club on topics including deep state socialists and Western values. That's according to the club's website. Proud Boys is a far-right men's organization. It's listed as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Hours before the speech, the GOP club was vandalized by far-left Antifa groups, that's short for anti-fascist, who broke a window and scrawled graffiti on the front door. They also left a threatening note saying this is only the beginning. Both Proud Boys and the Antifa groups condone violence as a means of getting their message across. After McInnes spoke and Proud Boy members left the club, widely circulated video showed some of the group beating up some of the Antifa protesters. Three Antifa protesters were arrested and charged with fighting with a Proud Boy supporter. And on Monday, some of the Proud Boy members allegedly involved in the violence were also arrested. Both Democrats and Republicans in New York have seized on the incidents, each blaming the other for it. Governor Cuomo held two press conferences in 2 days on the topic and appeared on the Reverend Al Sharpton's radio show. The governor wants the FBI to investigate, and he's asked the state police hate crimes unit to look into the matter.
The invitation from the Metropolitan Republican Club to have the Proud Boys speak in New York 22 days before an election was a despicable, vulgar, insidious act. This is not about First Amendment, and they're not making a First Amendment statement. We honor the First Amendment in New York. No state honors it more. Hate speech is not protected as free speech.
Cuomo says he holds President Trump responsible and says the appearance of the Proud Boys at the Republican Club was a political tactic. He spoke with reporters on Sunday.
It's all about the midterm elections. It's all about turnout. And they're trying to fire up their base. And this is Trump at his worst.
Cuomo called on state Republicans to repudiate the decision to invite McInnes to speak. State Republicans in a statement say they are the victims here and were subject to vandalism and threats simply because they invited a controversial figure to give a talk at their club. Republican candidate for governor Mark Molinaro called on Cuomo to condemn the vandalism and call for calm on the political left. Cuomo says he does not condone the vandalism and anyone who committed those crimes should be held accountable. State GOP Chair Ed Koch said in a tweet that Cuomo was silent on the vandalism for a full day and has now decided to blame it all on President Trump. Koch says Cuomo is all politics all the time. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, it was the Libertarian candidate for governor's turn on your Capital Connection program. His name is Larry Sharp. To give people perspective, he's an African-American. He paints himself as a businessman, a coach of leadership. And he had some very definite plans about issues like education and cannabis and the use of cannabis and other issues that are topping the gubernatorial race this year.
Well, there's something about this guy that has caught some attention. In terms of the minor candidates, he's doing relatively well. In terms of, you know, any kind of real opposition to Andrew Cuomo or to Mark Molinaro, forget it. But when a candidate comes out and starts to seem a little bit different, we've seen this with the election of the president of the United States, you know, they can catch the wind. I think to some degree, libertarians, and I have never quite understood what a libertarian is, it sounds to me more and more like they're Republicans. But libertarians have a unique perspective on things, usually described as fiscally conservative. But, you know, don't tell me what to do, because human beings have a right to act in the way that they want to. Now, whether his education plan is any good, I don't know. It didn't sound to me like it was going to be very different. You know, the idea that you would let every single district make its own decisions and, you know, basically hands off is not a good one. I'll tell you why, because there are districts, terrible districts, who are really, not being fair to all of their students. And I can only say that it's a little naive to think that if you just give carte blanche to administrators in the various districts to do as they wish without the State Department of Education looking over it, hey, that ain't good. And politics does tend to get into it. We got into a long discussion about the Lower Hudson Valley Curious Joel group, in which a group of Orthodox folks have basically taken over that district, and it hasn't been good for those people who don't fit into that category. At least that's my impression of the way that it's going. So, you know, beware of guys who basically offer you placebos, but where there are some problems with them.
From there to the question that many are asking is in the New York Times. As we speak today, Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York seems poised to win a third term, so why won't he debate his challengers?
Well, David, you and I have been around for a long time. I love Mario Cuomo, but he did the same thing. If you're ahead in the polls, you don't want to give the other guy an even break. And that's exactly what's going on here. Obviously, Andrew Cuomo is following the old playbook, which is if you're 2-1, why screw it up? Why risk anything by having a debate? God knows, people, you know, might make up their minds a different way than they're going right now. So you say no, and you stick to it. And then if you have to do it, you make sure that all the minor party candidates are involved so that it's not a one-on-one debate and, that things get diffused. Yeah, the New York Times is certainly right to criticize Andrew, but we all know what's going on, so do they.
Of course, the governor has been raising quite a bit of money, not only for himself, but pushing to turn the Senate blue and making it all-out effort in that area when in the past he's been accused of not being so.
Yeah, I've written a column on it, in fact, on that very subject this week, and I've talked about this an awful lot. Many of us suspect that Andrew Cuomo was responsible for keeping the rogue Democrats, the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, who caucused with the Republicans and kept them in power, that the governor was casting at least a blind eye on the whole operation. But then a lot of people began, it took some time, but people began to ask that question. How do you want to run for president if you're keeping the Republicans in power in New York State? So all of a sudden, with a great passion, the governor calls them all into the room after all these years of, as I say, casting that blind eye on them, and says, get back where you belong. Well, I've been writing it, David, you know it. I've been saying it on this program again and again. That's what he should do. Call them in and say, hey, your Democrats all get in the same room. But no, he didn't do it. But now, maybe because he's going to have greater ambitions, he's going to win a huge victory in New York, and he's going to want to run for president, even though he says he would not, and that there would be retribution from the heavens if he broke his word. Oh, well, that was then, this is now. So we can only assume that this change of heart and getting the Democratic Party in control is part of the grand plan.
Meanwhile, the other question hanging in the air, I guess, is that amidst some of the corruption scandals that have occurred during the Cuomo administration, including this week, Peter Galbraith being sentenced to months in prison for some of his role in some of these scandals, the issue of corruption doesn't seem to be affecting the voters' opinion.
Not a bit. It's so interesting. The long lost, I'm just using those in quotes, third brother is convicted and is going to go to jail. His friend Todd House, same thing. Elaine Caliero, same thing. These are the people who are very close to the governor. And yet, the people in New York State say, okay, well, you know, they all do it. And his name is Cuomo, and that's a famous name. And water off a duck's back.
Legislative Gazette political observer, Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. State and local officials are marking the completion of the first phase of a long-awaited project intended to create a new gateway to the Southern Adirondack region. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
In his January 2017 State of the State address, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a plan to create a tourism hub at Exit 29 of the Adirondack Northway in North Hudson at the long-closed frontier town. Days later, he was in Plattsburgh to describe the proposal.
We want to build a gateway to the Adirondacks, $32 million to redevelop the existing property as a multi-use facility, camping, access to Schroon Lake, dining, lodging, hiking, preserve the history of Frontier Town, but really build a new gateway facility to the Adirondacks.
The Department of Environmental Conservation is constructing and will operate campgrounds on 91 acres of the former theme park property. Officials gathered recently to celebrate completion of Phase 1, which includes an equestrian camping area, a seasonal day-use area along the Schroon River, staff facilities, and parking for trail access. Town of North Hudson Supervisor Ron Moore expects a number of jobs to result from the state's work and from a new brewery being built adjacent to the site.
If you couple that with the numbers of recreational activities that we're going to have, biking, mountain biking, kayaking, tubing, horseback riding, and then your typical hiking and so on and so forth. And we're 7 miles from the Boris Ponds Tract. Having that array of activities, I think, will pull some people off of more highly used areas and will result in new business growth.
Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism President James McKenna believes the state's work will significantly benefit the region.
The state has moved quite quickly on it, and they seem to have it on their radar screen for completion next year. And it's very valuable because it's located right off the Northway, number one. Number two, it's identifying some areas where we've seen some real need for advancement, certainly camping, certainly horseback riding, and other things. But the fact that it will have such access to a large number of people, I-87 or the Adirondack Northway is the main feeder for, you know, the New York metropolitan area, the capital region, and beyond. And this should serve as a good location to help diversify where all our hikers are going presently.
Phase two of the project will include creation of recreational vehicle and tent campsites. According to the governor's office, in 2017, more than 12 million people visited the Adirondacks, an increase of nearly 20% since 2011. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
Earlier this month, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo unveiled animation of a bicycle and pedestrian path on the Mario Cuomo Bridge. The shared use path is a work in progress. Mayors of the villages at each end of the Tappan Zee replacement say while they look forward to the path's opening next year, they still have some concerns. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn picks up the story.
Cuomo says the 3.6-mile bicycle and pedestrian path will be one of the longest in the U.S. and will be the first dedicated crossing for such users spanning the Hudson River between Rockland and Westchester counties. Bonnie Christian is mayor of South Nyack on the Rockland County side. She says after controversy early on, years of partnership have yielded an agreeable plan.
However, we have concerns, and the Thruway and the state have been listening to our concerns. You know, one being, will the shared use path be open 24/7? You know, the state will be patrolling it. And, you know, we are a residential area. So one of our concerns is we'd like it open from dawn to dusk. I know the bikers want it 24/7. You know, maybe somewhere in the middle we can compromise. I don't know.
On the Westchester side, Tarrytown Mayor Drew Fixell shares concern about the hours.
You know, having it open at 2 o'clock in the morning just doesn't seem to be a particularly great idea.
He adds,
what will be interesting and you know, could be plus, could be minuses, is how much is it truly going to be used by people commuting on bicycles? And if that will be a, you know, if there will be a significant number. I mean, there are some people, some bikers who have said, well, what if we bike to the, you know, we bike across, we get on the train, we go to the city, and then we come home late from work and it's closed. Now, I believe the answer to that is that they have put bike racks on the new buses that are going to be traveling across the bridge. So I think that concern is pretty much alleviated, or should be alleviated. I'm sure the bikers won't, you know, they won't feel that it's, you know, satisfactory.
The commuter buses will have bike racks. Meantime, a Thruway Authority spokesman says the state has not made any final decisions regarding hours and that it is working with the village mayors, bicyclists, and others. South Nyack's Christian has another concern.
Parking is a concern for us because, you know, no one knows if 54 parking spaces that they are putting on Thruway property will be enough. And we... we have an RFP out for a consultant on parking. We got a grant to look at parking. We need help to see what streets in South Nyack, you know, where we would see the most parking. And I'm sure that would be, you know, around where the shared use path is and, you know, where we could charge, where we could deter. It's a combination of trying to deter parking, but also if there will be parking, you know, it's a chance for our village to make some money off of it too, or make a profit.
Parking on both sides is on state land. In Westchester, the parking will be shared with the lot for the Thruway's new maintenance facility. This, says the Thruway Authority spokesman, would yield more than 120 spots on weekends, counting use of the maintenance spots. And when not using the maintenance spots, there will be 30 spaces for the shared path users. On the Rockland side, there are about 55 spots on state land. In addition to parking lots, each landing point will feature bicycle repair stations, restrooms, and other amenities. Tarrytown's Fixell.
I mean, it's not in a residential area directly, but, you know, it's some distance away. And there's a fair amount of parking provided, especially on the weekends. But if it's, you know, exceedingly popular, it does... There is the potential for the parking to be used up and then there'd be spillover. And then the question is what happens with those cars when they come. Now the state authority has, you know, they've sort of committed to dealing with it if that happens and finding solutions.
The shared use path is slated for completion in 2019 with a 12-foot wide path on the northern side of the westbound span of the bridge. New York State Thruway Authority Acting Executive Director Matthew Driscoll offered a first look at the animation earlier in October at the 2018 New York Bike Summit in Saratoga Springs.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Next year, the state capital, Albany, will host a six-day international sporting competition and entertainment festival. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Female athletes from the United States and all around the world will gather in Albany for the Aurora Games, inspired by the Olympics and named in honor of the Roman goddess of the dawn. Speaking Monday, Aurora Games creator and executive producer Jerry Solomon says it's a slate of sports competitions.
What we want to do is have a festival that is going to extend from the streets out there through the arena up into the convention center, and we're going to celebrate women's sports like it's never been celebrated before. So with that, I'm happy to announce that we're going to be bringing the Aurora Games August 20th to the 25th, 2019, right here to Albany to the Times Union Center.
Alongside the competition will be a festival celebrating women in entertainment, the arts, business, and culture. Aurora Games Advisory Board member Donna DeVerona is a former Olympic swimming gold medalist and ABC sports journalist.
We found out that 94% of women that make it in the higher echelons in the C-suite as CEOs, CFOs, COOs have had a sports background, and 50% have competed in college. So what does that say about the sport experience? There is a direct correlation. It's about leadership and about taking our place as businesswomen and functioning in our culture. And you know what? We're the envy of the world. So it's important that we are the first to do the Aurora Games next August, to welcome the world to come here and see, after 40-some years of work, of breaking down doors and prejudice, what sport can do on the field of play, because you never know where sports can take you.
Solomon says the Games conducted a nationwide search, finally settling on the TU Center.
We needed to go to a building that had the capability to turn over from one sport to the next, to the next, to the next, over a six-day period, and we knew that that could be done here.
County Executive Dan McCoy is hoping the Games will make Albany home for good.
We also want to promote athletes in Albany County to enhance the vision by featuring women in arts, culture, education, and entertainment throughout the event. And that's what we want to add to the Aurora Games, to give an opportunity to people here just locally.
To date, 15 countries have signed up to participate in the Games, which are to be held every 2 years. Tickets will go on sale Friday, March 8th, International Women's Day.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1842. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.